Greetings, grand and upstanding gamers, to yet another episode of the Daily Days Podcast, that weekly show that revels in everything retro, but through a modern lens. I'm Mr. Picario, your humble correspondent on this epic adventure, and today we're taking a brief look at the latest mini all-in-one machine that has finally reached the West, and this is Konami's TurboGrafx-16. While I hope to someday do a more thorough, in-depth take on the device, as I did with the Sega Mega Drive Mini, this bite-sized show is really just intended to provide my initial impressions now that I actually have a unit in my hands. Is this the ultimate retro plug-and-play console? It might just very well be. So, for those of you who are super time-crunched, let me just spoil the ending right now. For anyone interested in this form of retro gaming, you know, buying modern compilations of classic games, whether on home consoles or the specialized machines, Konami's little gem of a system is well worth a purchase. I'd say get it without delay. But like all these tiny retro revivals, the TurboGrafx-16 Mini, also known as the PC Engine and PC Engine Core Graphics in Japan and Europe respectively, comes with its own share of quirks and minor disappointments. On the plus side, the system has an automatic advantage over its competition like the Super Nintendo Classic and the Sega Genesis Mini due to its library of games many have never experienced before. Indeed, when the original TurboGrafx-16 released in America back in 1989, it was soundly trounced by both Sega and Nintendo's offerings. It was even worse in Europe, where the system barely appeared at all. But ironically, this sad reality actually works to the Turbo Mini's advantage, as its games now seem altogether fresher than, say, playing Super Mario World or Sonic the Hedgehog for the billionth time. It doesn't hurt that the selection of titles here are mostly quality releases, with just a few duds here or there. But I'll touch on those games in a minute. The bad news is that the unit itself is pretty bare bones, with just the system, a single controller, a power mini USB cord, and an HDMI cable. Yep, no second controller or power adapter here, which is a little off-putting for a device that costs $99.99. While a spare power adapter can probably be found around the homestead thanks to an old phone or two, most will need and want that second controller, adding another $25 to the bill. As for the one included gamepad, I found it sufficed rather well for each of the console's 57 included games. Because I never owned a TurboGrafx-16 back in the day though, I can't do a direct comparison, but the buttons, D-pad, and the embedded rapid-fire switches, the latter of which are a rather keen innovation of the original system, all boast a responsive, durable feel. Problem is, and it's hard to explain exactly, but the controller build itself feels a little inflexible and, after long plays, just a bit abrasive in my hand, especially for those games where my thumbs are in constant motion. It's just a minor quibble, though, that rarely caused me any great concern, but its stiff, intractable feel was not something I recall ever having with the Super Nintendo pad, for instance. And here's a pro tip regarding the unit itself. On the American model, there's a back compartment that must be disconnected first before applying the power and HDMI cords. I had a struggle trying to pry this thing loose, but it's actually quite easy if you know the trick. Simply flip the system upside down and pull on the groove seen on the middle of the compartment shell. It'll then snap off with little more than a tug. Okay, so this system is a little steep in price, but generally well built. So far, so good, I guess. But what about those games? Well, another compliment is due. The console's interface is clean and streamlined with some catchy music to boot. And it even boasts some cool animations showing the selected game, whether U card or CD, being placed into a digital mock-up of the system. Beyond this, owners will be presented with two separate lists of games, the American releases, if you will, and then the Japanese side of things. This is where it gets a tad confusing. While both lists feature mostly unique games, there is some overlap, so don't be confused when you see Newtopia or Ys appearing on both menus, one of which contains only the Japanese language version. If one had to judge the two offerings here, I'd say the US is the more accessible of the bunch, with more recognizable straightforward fare like Splatterhouse, New Adventure Island, Lords of Thunder, and Box Revenge. The Japanese side is more eclectic, a little weirder, and probably would be considered superior if it hadn't been for the fact that its choices are purely the Japanese originals. This means there are no English translations here, I'm afraid, which means coveted or interesting titles like Snatcher, Necromancer, Super Momotaro Dentetsu 2, if I got that right, and Spriggan Mark 2 are either completely unplayable or are at least severely compromised in their fun factor. It's a shame, but I think Konami sees these additional games as being more akin to extras anyway. Better than not having them at all seems to be its philosophy. Nevertheless, owning a physical form now of such rarities as Ginga Fuke Densetsu Sapphire, or the bizarre Choaniki, or the weird port of Ninja Gaiden, or the obscure Super Graphics console version of Ghosts and Goblins, still makes this second set a worthy and really invaluable addition to the console. Indeed, both libraries are joys to explore for those unfamiliar with these amazing games, even despite those inevitable duds. I'm looking at you, the Kung Fu and Motor Rotor. Lastly, as I mentioned on a previous show, some have complained about emulation problems regarding lag and audio. Although I'm not an expert on these matters, I was pleasantly surprised to find all the games very playable. The only title in which I sense lag might be affecting my gaming was Ninja Gaiden, but since I haven't played the original version, I can only speculate. Again, someday I'll dive into this machine in more depth, but for now, it's an easy recommend. Objectively, I'm not sure it quite tops the Genesis or Super NES minis, but its games are more interesting than the former and certainly outnumber the latter, so it might actually be the best mini we've seen overall, if only it had included a second controller. Without it, these games are missing a little of their former magic. Ah, well. As always, thanks for listening, everyone, and I shall return next week in aim of celebrating Pac-Man's 40th anniversary / birthday. Until then, this is Mr. Picario, signing off for now.